Welcome to the Addiction Solution Podcast. I'm Michelle Dunbar. Enjoy listening and watching as addiction experts Mark Sheeran and I cover controversial as well as helpful topics on addiction, how to move past it, and other related subjects. As two of the co-founders of the Freedom Model, Mark and I will give you a completely new perspective on the topics that matter to you. We will take to task the Recovery Society's lies and misinformation and replace them with facts, research, and the methods to move on from addiction struggles without 12-step meetings, rehabs, and the shackles of endless recovery. Let's escape the treatment and recovery trap together and learn to be free. Welcome to the truth.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Addiction Solution. I'm Michelle Dunbar.
And I'm Mark Sheeran. And together with our colleague Stephen Slate, we co-wrote The Freedom Model for Addictions, Escape the Treatment and Recovery Trap. So,
can I just say something quick?
Yeah.
Somebody comments. So we've been very active. Mark was just going to say we've been very active on social media. And somebody commented, I did a video that said, addiction is not a disease and the DSM is irrelevant, which I believe, and it's the case. And I made a case for why the DSM is irrelevant. And the person said, I watched this video because I thought you were going to tell me why it's not a disease. Well, it see the thickness of this book? Okay. The original book was 1,000 pages and we cut it down to 470 because that's what it takes to debunk the mythology. So no, we're not going to do that in a 1 or 2 or 3
in a reel.
But if you want to know the research behind why addiction is not a disease, our book has got the best collection of research. We pulled it all together and put it in one place for you. And the research in here is easy for you to find it. So you can vet it and know that this is the real deal. And so if you really are interested in debunking the addiction disease mythology, you got to read the book.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no shortcut to that. I'm sorry.
So that brings up another topic that probably should be pointed out there on this point. And that is when people have a lot of vitriol or a reaction that is visceral about, you know, us saying it's not a disease or that recovery is a sham or something like that. And their instant reaction is to defend it and then say, give me the answer really quick. That tells you automatically that they should probably read the entire book.
Yeah.
Because the book, when you have that depth of mythology and misinformation, it's really hard to undo it without a comprehensive understanding of what the hell is going on. And you can't get a comprehensive understanding in a reel. There are so many different data points in your mind that you may think are real. You know, the need for support, yes, the idea of willpower being necessary, the idea.
Which we once believed ourselves.
All
you
of
need
it.
To know.
All of it. And so reading the entire book is really necessary for a lot of you out there who may want the quick answer. Now, ironically, the first three chapters, one of the chapters is called The Quick Answers, right?
Chapter 3.
Yeah. We go through in those first three chapters, we really debunk a lot. But the problem is that there are a lot of little details that will keep you trapped.
For sure. Nuance.
Yeah. So you have to debunk all of that. So I would read the whole damn book.
Absolutely. And that, a video that I got that is still rolling out there that really hits people in a lot of different ways is just and I've done this video before, I've done this topic before, just because you don't stop drinking, doing drugs, watching pornography, whatever it is, just because you don't stop doesn't mean you can't, even if you say, I don't want to do this. Okay. We've been there where there was a part of us that said we wanted to stop drinking, and maybe we told people we wanted to stop drinking. For a period of time, I said I wanted to stop drugs, and I didn't until I did. Okay. And I did that without rehab, without anything. I was a daily drug user for a few years. And then I decided one day I'm not doing that anymore. I actually, my situation changed. I was away at college. I came home because I failed out, and I decided I'm not doing drugs at home. I'm not doing drugs at home. I kept drinking. Drinking's more acceptable. And there was a part of me, even though I had quit the drugs, which included opiates, by the way, even though I had quit the drugs, there was a part of me that believed I can't stop drinking. I can't stop drinking.
That's super common.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, and then I, there was an intervention done with me. And so I dove deeper into drinking daily and withdrew from everyone around me. Because once an intervention is done, the jig is up, right? Everybody knows what you're doing. And so I was just going to go do it. If I'm an alcoholic, which you're telling me that I am, then I'm just going to go do it.
Yeah. So you're bringing up a whole bunch of different topics. I always go to, when we have this conversation, what did people do before the idea of powerlessness or disease mythology, right?
Right.
Prior to Bill Wilson and Benjamin Rush and that sort of end of that century era.
Did everybody just
die?
Drink themselves into oblivion?
Yeah. Did they all go to jails, institutions, or death, as AA tells us is inevitable? And the recovery community is 80 years old. Human history is a lot longer than that.
For sure.
And so we have the benefit of written record of some very interesting facts. And we know, and we also have the benefit of sociology, the science of sociology, which is really interesting and is telling. So we have a lot of cultures that are primitive in the world, and their customs haven't changed when it comes to drinking. We have the benefit of written record of what was happening before the recovery cult encountered Western civilization, came into to become the view. And so what did people do?
Right.
And they did exactly what Michelle just talked about. And that was, I did drugs, and then I got to a place where I didn't want to do drugs, but I continued to do them. And then I simply said, I don't want to anymore.
And I stopped.
Right. So now, what's interesting is when you say that, people think you're being dismissive of their pain, but they also feel really offended because they think that we're ignoring the concept of addiction as a state of loss of control. And that's a really new idea. You don't know that maybe, but this idea of compelled use, that a substance controls your mind and your biology and conspires against you to create a powerless condition, that is a completely new idea. It's only 75 to 80 years old. So prior to that, people didn't carry that idea, and they were naive to that idea because it didn't exist. It wasn't part of the lexicon. It wasn't part of the culture. And you know what? In lots of cultures, people drank more and did more drugs per capita at younger ages and had more consistent habits, but yet didn't exhibit problems from it. Social problems. They exhibited health problems, of course. I mean, if you poison your body long enough, it'll kill you. But
right.
The point is, they didn't exhibit the things that we go to rehab for. They didn't exhibit, you know, public drunkenness rates. They didn't exhibit, they had social controls in place that were just the moral norms of the time. And so people didn't have, quote unquote, addiction, yet they drank more of the same identical compound we're talking about today.
Yeah, bad behavior wasn't tolerated,
right,
in many societies. And those people were outcast. The small percentage of people that did exhibit those behaviors were outcast from society and just went on and did their own thing someplace else. Right. But there wasn't this idea that these people were broken,
right?
That they were abnormal in any way, like that heavy substance use wasn't abnormal.
That's right. So I want to be clear about this, that in the situations that I'm talking about, these are big numbers of people, entire societies that drank more per capita, drank at younger ages, more consistently, in greater volume, and yet did not have the social problems we have today, nor did they feel compelled to use. They just did. And what Michelle just said is there was a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of people that would end up in a mental hospital or were outcast out of that society. But it was almost imperceptible. It was almost
exactly. It was minute.
An incredible anomaly in the culture, unlike today, where we have mass overdoses and all these social problems that are attributed to addiction. It's a common idea. So what that tells us as sociologists is it tells us that we are creating a social contagion, and that the idea of addiction and the idea that you're broken and the idea that the substance has the power and can compel you to use and becomes addictive and all of these myths now become a reality in society.
That's right.
So it's real important for you to know that we were victims of that and that we felt addicted. And we will always say that you feel addicted because the state of addiction or the state of a compelling substance rendering you powerless is a myth.
Yes.
So, but you can feel like it's the truth because you've been taught to feel that way. You've been taught to frame it that way. And so what the Freedom Model does is it takes that framework and says, wait, what are the facts about this? And it really comes down to how you interpret it.
So when I say just because you don't stop doesn't mean you can't, I'm also not saying, we're not saying that it's a matter of willpower. We're not saying that. People comment on that all the time. Oh, so you're saying it's just a matter of willpower. I just need to want it. You know, I just need to grit it, not do it. And it's like, no, that's a false dichotomy. We're also not saying it's a moral issue.
Or that you need to be in recovery or that it's got to be a battle, right? The framework of the battle that, you're just saying that I need to do this willpower thing and that I can just get over it and it's just a choice. And I say, it is just a choice, but it's not just a choice. It's a choice backed up by an understanding that you're choosing. And why are you choosing?
Yes.
And what are your beliefs behind the choice? And what are the beliefs that are keeping you trapped in that choice?
Yes.
And so it's not, there's, now you can only, Michelle said it perfectly, you can only give snippets in a reel. And so people jump on it and go right to that false dichotomy that, oh, you're just saying this, or you're saying it's a moral failing then. Like, I didn't say it was a moral failing.
No.
I never said anything. She's never said that. We've never said that once.
Not once.
And we've never been dismissive of your pain. Not once.
Never.
But do we say that AA is a cult? Yes.
Oh, hell yeah.
Do we say that the recovery cult, do we use those terms? Yes. That recovery is a sham? Yes, because the disease of addiction doesn't exist. So in a reel, we might say something really shocking. And then, but it's going to take you to investigate a bit.
Yeah.
Because you've spent, like we did, maybe decades investing in those lies and making them your reality. And when you do that, you're fucked. You're really in a bad position because you feel addicted. You feel powerless. You feel like you need recovery. You feel like you need meetings. You needed that rehab. You needed transitional living. You need harm reduction. You need medications. You need therapy. You need to take care of your trauma. I could go on and on
well,
and on.
You know, when I think about it, it's like when I was trying to figure out, you know, when I'm helping somebody try and figure out their why, like if you, just because you don't stop doesn't mean you can't. But what it means is you really don't want to. And so you got to figure out, why don't I want to stop? I know I want to not have all of this other stuff.
Chaos.
That's coming with it, right? That my behavior is outrageous. I don't want to have that. I don't want to have the health issues. I don't, you know what you don't want, but you still want the thing. Okay. You have made the thing. And some people make the thing such an important part of their lives, they think about it continuously, right? I used to plan it. Now, the last 6 months of my drinking, my whole world was about it. And so I, from the moment I woke up, I thought about it. To the moment I went to bed, I was thinking about it. And so you plan your whole life around it. Even when I got to the point where I was like, my health is suffering, my relationships are gone. I'm working at a dead end job now because I can't get anything better. Even when everything else in my life that I thought I wanted was suffering, I still wanted this thing. And so I see things like I always put things into pictures in my mind. That's just the way that works for me. And so when you're looking and trying to find the why, I imagine it's a big handbag, right? With a bunch of shit in it. And so you're rummaging through the shit, trying to find the one thing, but there's so much there. And so when I say you don't want to, it isn't, I'm not saying just make the choice to stop. What I'm saying is maybe we're going to have to rummage through that handbag to figure out that the why, to figure out, because for me, piled in that handbag was, yes, maybe some weird trauma that I thought was related to my heavy substance use, because I had a pretty terrible childhood for the most part. I mean, I had good stuff too, because we all do, but there was some stuff that was wrong. And I had these beliefs about alcohol from years of watching my parents and years of propaganda, alcohol propaganda, and how wonderful the wonders of alcohol. But I also had in that handbag years of propaganda from AA, from being dragged to AA meetings as a kid about my disease of alcoholism that I was born with. Right. That I had this, and then the whole allergy idea, which is silly, but there's a part of you that starts to believe that shit because of the way you go for it. Like, I had a bleeding ulcer at the end and kept drinking. Okay. So I get it. So that bleeding, for all you people out there that are like, you probably weren't a real alcoholic, that's why you can stop on your own. I don't know too many people that will drink themselves into blood bleeding. Okay. But some people do. I did. So, but in the end, did I have to do all that stuff to stop? I didn't, because I naturally got to a point where I was too sick. I was honestly physically ill and quit drinking because I was physically ill, and went 5 days without drinking to try and not be physically sick anymore. And during that time period, I decided, I don't think I want to drink like that anymore, just like I had with the drugs. So I felt like I couldn't stop, but I did. And anybody can.
That's so important. Anybody can. And the thing that's holding you back is not the drinking. It's your beliefs about your habit,
exactly.
Your beliefs about the ritual of it, your beliefs about the value of the buzz, your beliefs about what the drug can and can't do for you. And I think that that's really, when we dive into those specifics, I'm amazed. I've been doing this, coaching people, Michelle and I, for 37 years, and people, when I'm coaching them, will want to really bypass. Yeah. I know that I like alcohol.
Right.
I go, no, stop. You really, really value this, and you choose it for yourself. Stop long enough to say that. I own your habit, because it can't happen without your permission. It can't, you know, a habit cannot be formed without your express permission to create it. You create the habit. The drug doesn't create a habit. It has no mind to do that. So this small nuance is the starting point in my coaching. And people want to just go, yeah. Well, I hate it. No, you don't. You don't hate it, because your actions tell us you don't hate it. You like the buzz. You hate the disaster that comes with it.
Yeah.
So But the thing that's driving the habit is your beliefs about the benefits of that experience and nothing more, nothing more. And so diving into those benefits, those perceived benefits, and then challenging whether they you're getting those results is a crucial part of this entire process of getting over the problem. Now, if you don't have a lot of mythology, if you've already sort of realized that it's not a disease, you know you don't have a disorder, you know you're choosing it, but you're still horribly confused, we're halfway there.
Yes.
You know, at that point. But there's a whole bunch of chapters here that deal with all the different specific lies that we tell ourselves and the misinformation we've been provided. So we have to, and when I coach somebody, and I know Michelle does the same thing, by the time we're done with that first session, by the second and third sessions, we've listed out on a notebook all the myths. You're just talking, right, in that first session, and we're getting this information. We're asking a lot of questions, and I'm writing down every myth. And usually there's 8 to 12, I would say, on average, of big myths that have you totally screwed.
Even people who have read the book.
Yes. Yes.
Because you're reading from a perspective, okay? You bring all your baggage with you when you start to read The Freedom Model.
That's right.
You know, your experiences, all of your belief systems. And so I call it an onion, right? That's another one of my visuals. I call it an onion. You're peeling back layers of this onion to reveal, like people have read the book 3 and 4 times, because each time they read it, they may really come to understand and believe, oh, that wasn't real.
So she's bringing up something that's really, really cool. And that is, people learn in different ways. So what we did, what we figured out over that nearly 4 decades is people learn differently. And there are pieces that you have to hone in on. So let's say somebody reads the book and then they read it again. And they're like, fuck, there's just something that is struggling. I need coaching. And then I talk to them, or she talks to them on the phone. We do the consult. We go, wait a minute. You don't need coaching. You need the deprogramming course, or you need the workshop that deals specifically with your binge construct, how you drink in the hotel room or how you drink in the garage or whatever it is.
Your specific habit around that fetish, that thing that you value so much that you've been willing to pay very high costs for it.
So there's different little products that we've created that address each person differently. Now, some people do need, like I needed coaching. She needed coaching. I was her coach and her father was my coach. And I had to talk it out, because that's how I figure out things. But I've met a whole bunch of people who learn by video, because we now have the YouTube generation who learn that way.
Yeah.
And so the videos work. The online program is another thing, right? Where people want to go through the book, but in video form.
Yes.
So that goes from literally the very beginning of the book to the very last page in tutorials.
Yeah.
And that's for the person that is a YouTuber, because that's basically the Freedom Model's version of YouTube. Now, we have our YouTube channel and we have this podcast. Obviously, you already know about those things. But if you want a systematic way to go through the book in video form with Michelle and I teaching you, it's all pre-recorded for you. So it really comes down to your learning style, what myths are keeping you trapped. Everything that we design has topic headings so that you can be like, oh my God, that's the topic heading I need about moderation, or I believe I can't moderate, or I believe that my trauma causes this. Well, what does the online program say about that? You know, and what is the research behind the validity or not? And so we go through all those things. So you don't have to guess. You don't have to guess. We've spent literally decades building this for you.
Yeah. So I guess the purpose of this podcast was to address those most pointed critiques or criticisms of our videos where people are like, why don't you teach us this in a Why don't you explain why addiction is not a disease? Why don't you, explain what you mean by you don't need willpower? Well, all of that can be found in our products, because these are not 10-minute discussions. They're not 30-minute discussions. They're not even, this is our 293rd episode of our podcast. And we just keep talking about this stuff, because when something has been around for 100 years, almost 100 years, right? That we have been, Benjamin Rush was a founding father of our country. So that's 200 years ago. He was the first person that coined the term alcoholism. And yes, it was a moral failing back then. That's the way they looked at it. But he also said that being gay was a disease.
Or being black.
Black was a disease. He had terms for that too. He had some pretty strange ideas. And when he was thinking about alcoholism, he was thinking about some of those people that specifically drink heavily and exhibit bad behavior.
Antisocial
behavior, which was still even then a very tiny percentage of the population.
Yeah, it wasn't the 10%. And mind you, they drank more per capita. There's records of this.
Yes.
In colonial America, we drank continuously, basically, all the time, because we had a fear of water.
The water was poison.
Right. In Europe. But here it wasn't, obviously. But they didn't know that. So they had literally a fear of water. So rotting fruit was something that was seen as a foodstuff and was celebrated. It was called the good creature of God. And it was drank from basically when your body could tolerate it, about 8-9 years old, all the way till you died. And yet the social fabric didn't break down.
No.
You know, we're talking drinking rates that are higher than any place on the planet, maybe with the exception of Skid Row or whatever.
And we cite a lot of this in our book. We read these sociology books that talk all about the history of alcohol, the history of opiates. These things have been around for millennia.
Yeah, and recovery is new. And with recovery being new, the concept of powerlessness and compelled use and loss of control have been mainstreamed. These things were talked about in jest, meaning they didn't mean anything. It was sort of comical. It was in jest when they were mentioned. But briefly, there was no construct around them. There was no social construct around them. That is a 75, 80-year-old thing that we now have in Western culture. And it's hurting people because it's making the habits longer. It's making the idea. It validates the idea, the myth, that a substance has power over you.
Yes.
And the only ones that benefit from that are the drug cartels and the beer companies and the liquor companies. That's
and
who benefits.
The treatment industry and the pharmaceutical industry now.
That's right.
Okay. To That's the tune right. of hundreds of millions of dollars.
Hundreds of billions
hundreds
now.
Hundreds of billions of dollars. Yeah.
Hundreds of billions worldwide in revenue based on mythology. So if you want to continue to be part of the recovery cult, do it. I mean, I don't want to be a part of that. I don't want to be a minion in that $150 billion industry that's just churning out misery and fabricating ideas because their pocketbook gets lined as a result. So
I want to answer one other thing, and that is the people that get 10, 20, 30, 40 years sober. Okay. And we know some of those people. Some of them are our friends. Okay. And they've gone to AA, and what the research shows about those people is that they decided that they are happier not using, not drinking, not using their drug of choice, and going to meetings than they are using their drug of choice. They are happier. So they still, the freedom model explains how they changed too. And I think I said this in a previous podcast, and that is, I needed to know how I solved my problem because I quit drugs while I was still drinking. Then I quit drinking before I went to a meeting, before I got any counseling, before I did anything. I quit those things. But when I went to AA and all the stuff I had learned up until I went there from being exposed to it as a child and being taught all this stuff in school about addiction and everything, because they were teaching us that even then in the 80s, didn't explain why I quit. It didn't make any sense to me. And then I went to AA and they're saying, oh, to stay quit, you got to keep coming. And I'm like, that doesn't make sense. I had to figure it out. And the freedom model explains that. Mm-hmm. Perfectly explains it.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you my experience when Mark and Steven were doing the bulk of the writing, they did the writing of this. I did a lot of the background research supporting the things that they were saying. Steven and I did that. But when they sent me the first 10 chapters, it was the first, and that was in 2015. And I had quit everything in 1990. That was the first time that I realized, holy shit, this is how I stopped. Like, this is the first thing that's ever explained that to me. And so many people have that experience when they read the Freedom Model. And you can look at all of our reviews on Amazon because people are like, this is the shit I've been thinking. I can't even say that because I wasn't thinking that. I didn't know. All I knew was I don't want to be drunk anymore. That's all I knew. I don't want to be drunk anymore. I changed my mind. I don't know how I did that. Well, that's how I did it. The Freedom Model explains that perfectly.
It does.
And regardless of how you stop.
Yeah. And it's going to explain if you stop in AA. It's going to explain if you went to a rehab. It's going to explain if you quit on your couch. It's going to explain all of it because we all, in the end, make the decision the same exact way. That's internally within our mind. Based on a value proposition that we make to ourselves. And we may ignore that process happened, or we get talked out of it. We get talked out of our own experience with recovery lore. And then we get wrapped up in this big distraction called recovery.
And we doubt ourselves.
Yeah. And then we're taught not to even trust what we think. And that's what happened to me.
Yeah, me too.
Both Michelle and I basically made the same decision in two different parts of the world at two different times. And didn't know each other. And that's true about all people. We're all deciding in different ways, but it's all within our mind.
So you can give credit to whatever. You can give credit to whatever. People fall in love and they spontaneously change. People have a child and they decide, I'm going to change. Like, you can give credit to whatever. You can give credit to AA. You can keep going and give credit to AA if that's what you want to do. But in the end, you chose and you continue to choose. And if you no longer can even consider getting drunk and high anymore, well, you've made a decision. You've aged out of it like nearly everyone does. You've decided it's just not important to you anymore. And that's awesome. That is awesome.
But if you really want to just move on from it, from all of it.
From all of it. And just be
recovery
free.
And just be like, oh, that was a time in my life where that's what I did. Now I'm moving forward. You have to let go of the myths that are going to keep you attached to a recovery cult.
Fear.
And doubt and lack of self-confidence and all the things that are a part of the recovery world. This fragility that you're fragile and you're biocentrically driven. And you're not, we don't reduce you to a bunch of chemicals. Mm-mm. That bioreductionism is really damaging to people. So you can let all that go.
Yeah.
And you can move on. If that's what you want, that's what the Freedom Model provides, because we provide the knowledge that you are your answer and always have been. That's it.
So this is for you people. I hate that. This is for the people who are ready to maybe move on, move beyond 12-step recovery, move beyond feeling fragile or broken or worried about relapse or triggers or all those things. Or this is also for people who don't want to have to go down that road, who maybe you're struggling with substance use. and you don't want to have to go into the recovery model, we are providing a free live event that's coming up on June 4th, which is in a couple weeks, and or next week. Is it next week? It's already next week.
No, week and a half.
No, it's next week. Like this is the last week in May. Yeah. Next Thursday, at noon Eastern time, we're in the eastern part of the United States, which allows us to also reach people in Western Europe, and people on the West Coast of the U.S. So, yeah, noon time, join us for our free live event. The link will be below this on our YouTube channel. You can also sign up by going to thefreedommodel.org. There'll be a pop-up there.
Or on Facebook or TikTok.
Or on Facebook or TikTok. Like, we have a bunch of videos talking about it. So, yeah, join us for a free live event. We'd love to talk with you. It's going to be a short presentation where we're going to talk to you about how people move on from being in 12-step recovery and help people solve their substance use problem without it. And then we're going to have about a 30-minute Q&A session. So,
yeah. So if you want to ask us questions, you know, come to the event. The other thing is, if you can't make it, it's going to be recorded. So
it is.
You can watch it. So sign up anyway, even if you can't make the time, and then watch it afterwards.
Yeah, especially I know we have people that watch us on the other side of the world, in Australia, New Zealand. Sign up. Hey, if you want us to do one at a different time and you're on that side of the world, let us know in the comments below. And as always, subscribe to our channel, like and share our stuff. Thank you so much to all of our fans. You are awesome.
All right, everybody. Have a great day.
Bye.